This podcast is brought to you by iGel. iGel offers the next generation edge operating system designed for simple, secure, and high performance access to virtual desktops and cloud workspaces. Easy to implement and straightforward to operate.
At the third stroke, it will be.
Well, hello and welcome to EUC Digest, your bi-weekly audio snack on everything EUC related. In today's show, we'll be talking about how this pandemic impacts EUC. But before we dive into the change reality we are living in today, please allow us to introduce ourselves. My name is Erik van Klaveren, and I'm your host for this episode. And with me in the air is Jits Langendijk. Hi, Jits. How are you doing, and how are you holding from your cabin fever?
Hey, Erik. I'm good, very good. So no cabin fever here, and yeah, looking forward to record this podcast. So
Right. Hey, but what did you find out about our guest?
Yes. Interesting. So. Did you know, before he started his career in IT, he was a bit of a rascal and played guitar in several punk bands and ate bats for breakfast? So I'm not sure whether there's still this pandemic, right? There is maybe some relationship towards bats. So interesting
so one. Did we actually found patient zero?
Oh, maybe. We can
we ask
this. Yeah, definitely. But, and furthermore, he's known for a lot of, previews, reviews, and for video items, for IGN. And he's a recurring shoutcaster in the Zico eBattle F1. So I've seen him a couple of times on television. And he's a columnist
He's a celebrity, right?
Yes. It's a true honor to have him on the show. And he's a columnist for GP fans. And one of the hosts in the Login Techcast. So he's quite a famous celebrity, as you said. And
awesome.
More importantly, I guess, we wouldn't be recording this podcast if it wasn't for him, right? So he was one of the founding fathers, together with yourself and myself, and that we founded this EUC Digest Foundation. And but due to reshifting the focus, he stepped down out of the board of this foundation, and but we're very happy to have him here on this episode finally.
We sure do, and we go way back. So if you still don't know who our guest is, please, guest, introduce yourself.
Hi, it's so good to be back. So I'm Sander Noordijk. I'm a solution engineer, digital workspace for VMware. And as mentioned, I go way back with these guys. And it's really weird to finally be on the show that I was supposed to be having all of the time myself. But as you mentioned, things shifted. Focus had to be changed due to children and jobs and everything that comes along. But yeah, it's amazing to be here. How are you guys?
Yeah, we're actually all working from home, as these tend to be a trend today.
Mm-hmm. But we're
holding on, Sander. Holding strong.
That's for sure.
Yeah, I must say, you mentioned cabin fever, and cabin fever is a serious thing.
As
I've been discovering lately, because we used to drive all the time, we used to have lots of little breaks during your workday, and nowadays it's just sitting behind a screen like an office worker all day in the same room, and it's not what I was made to do. So I found myself working at the kitchen table again sometimes when the kids are asleep. I'll just go downstairs and work there just to have a change of scenery.
Yeah, it's actually I've been told by one of your fellow co-workers that cabin fever and the consumption of liquor, strong liquor, is actually a thing. That's why it's so expensive in the Nordics.
Obviously I don't partake in the devil's nectar, but
no, you don't, you little rascal. Thank you of course being on our show, and like we mentioned before, we go way back. I think we know each other for almost 20 years or so, 18 years or something.
Yeah, definitely, when we still had long hair and we're cool.
Yeah, we didn't have children. But let's start with our interesting topic for today, which is more of a holistic approach on how the world and especially technology is changing. Something we quite actually often did for the past 15 years, discuss some present day events on how this world and stuff change, especially around technology and other topics of our interest. So let's start small. How does this pandemic change you and the use of technology, and especially in end-user computing?
Yeah, it's funny you'd say that, because I've been thinking about this, obviously. And at first you'd say not much has actually changed, because we used to work from home quite some times. We used to be able I'm still using a laptop, a phone, a second screen. But if I'm looking at how I'm sitting here in this room today, it is way, way, way different than it was.
How is that? Because you're there way, way more than you used to be?
So I moved house last year. So I had this desk and my attic. And the attic was just a gigantic mess, because it just had the little desk in the corner. It was ugly and brown, really dark. It had one little strobe light on the wall. And that was okay, because I was only there for an hour or two tops in a day. So when I was there, I was there to work. So I probably just look at my monitor. And for the rest, it didn't really matter. If I had to do a Zoom call or something, probably didn't have my cam on, or just accepted that lighting was bad. So when it turned out that we were going to be working from home for quite the foreseeable future, I figured, well, I might have to do some remodeling here. So first order of business, I painted everything white, because it resonates so nicely.
Not green? Because is a thing, especially with Zoom people.
Yeah. To get a nice green screen for your virtual backgrounds, right? So I'm not a big fan of those, but I can we can talk about that in a minute. No, I wanted something to be kind of neutral, and I was thinking of having one wall with an accent color, but that one's not wallpapered yet, because you haven't been in my house yet. So you're supposed to do that. So when you've wallpapered that wall, I'll probably do it green.
So all of a sudden, it's my problem.
Yes. I'm making this your problem at the moment. But other than that, so I moved my desk to create a kind of a scene, because of what I've mentioned, what you mentioned in the intro. I did a lot of video stuff for IGN to create a nice little scene with a couch and just have some conversations about video games. So I kind of tried to do that as well here. So I got myself some good lighting. I got two of these photography umbrella lights, give some nice natural daylight. I got myself a bigger monitor, got myself a keyboard, a laptop stand, because I used to just work on my laptop, but now it's actually raised so that I don't die. And I've got this big-ass gaming chair, which I've had for years, but I actually haven't really used up until now. And now my back's really happy.
That chair for like six times or something.
I think so too. And the stupid thing is, it was really expensive. But someone was like, well, do you want it? Yeah, I kind of want to. Don't have any use for it now, but probably some way. Well, I still do now. So So the home office is kind of different now.
So, but you changed the home office to a more like semi-professional setup. First of all, because you expected to be in this situation much longer than just for a couple of hours, as you were in Zoom calls prior to this pandemic, but. Is it only this, or you bought a lot of new stuff just specifically now for this situation, or also more for the long-term strategy?
Obviously a lot of this is for the long-term strategy, because I think it is nice to have a decent office. In my previous house, I didn't have anything like that, so I used to work at the kitchen table, and that's not something you do easily with two little children, as Eric might know. So it is really nice to be kind of two floors removed from them and to have a door that actually closes. That does help, but it does kind of isolate you. But other things, I bought a good microphone, as you can probably tell. That has some other reasons too, but I wanted to have something good to look back on, and some wireless headsets, some headphones, because I wanted to be able to walk around the house and connect to all of my devices and kind of cancel out any distractions.
And do you also use this microphone for your conference calls, or do you use something else for that?
No, actually this one right now.
Okay.
Because I just got it, so I'm still kind of experimenting with it. But yeah, you do have to explain why there's a giant silver microphone in your screen when you're done on a standard Zoom call with somebody who's just calling from their laptop without even using headsets.
Yeah, of course. And you've mentioned before, you do a lot of Zoom calls nowadays. I think it took a huge market share on the digital conferencing software vendors. Do you think this will be growing?
Well, they've been kind of negatively in the news, right? So what I see from customers we used to have Zoom calls with is that some areas are kind of moving away from that, moving strictly to Teams or to WebEx. To me, it really doesn't matter which one I use. So I have all of the clients installed. I do have my preferences, but within VMware internally, it is mostly Zoom, like pretty much all Zoom. And that's because it's just so easy, it works, and all of the security concerns are at least being addressed or have been addressed enough that it's being acceptable to use.
Yeah, but I think this growth and market share is especially because of the social distancing.
Definitely. I think most of that is because it is so easy. So when we ran into the issue of not seeing your parents for like a month, mm-hmm. and the little kids asking for them, I asked them, like, all right, let's just get your laptop out and we'll download Zoom and you can see us then. And then it works way better than holding up your phone and having just a short conversation. And we move to having like actual virtual tea visits for an hour or something. And that is because Zoom is easy. And I think that is a big reason why it's exploded so lately.
But you also have F-like kids who are going to school, right?
Yep.
Because my oldest kid is going to school as well, and they're using a lot of Hangout Meet.
Yep. Same here. All these schools, they have this almost for nothing, or maybe it is for nothing, these subscriptions from Google, right? So everything is in their G Suite, and they're in these Hangouts. Most of the time during the morning, But I expect, and for those kids, it's very easy, right? Kids are can easily adapt, and I think this will also stick in the long term. So that's also regarding the last question that you asked, whether this tremendous increase of online collaboration tools that's being consumed all over the world due to the pandemic. But would you, Sander, would you expect a decrease once all the when this pandemic will be ramping down and people will be meeting face to face again in the office again? Or do you still think, well, this is the time where these collaboration tools have proved to be efficient and productive, and maybe this will last much longer even after this pandemic? What do you expect in this?
Yeah, well, once the world returns to normal, I think we're going to be kind of dialing it down, but not way back to the way it was. Because when I look at it, I feel that most customers, but also like every company in the world, is right now having the biggest pilot for remote working for their office, and they're finding out that you can be productive when working from home, and you can get social interactions through video calls, and you might not want to or have to drive 2 hours to go to this hour-long meeting with a customer. I don't think that all of these face-to-face meetings will disappear. There's definitely still use, and I prefer to be in face-to-face for most of my most things. But some like follow-up meetings or anything, that there's no need to be driving that long anymore. And I think this pandemic has showed that that is very possible at the moment. Is that something you see as well?
Who are you asking to?
You then, Eric.
Okay, yeah, sure. I see this as well. And to my knowledge, we shared this before, that there are a lot of governmental and public customers we were serving in the past who are always difficult to convince that working from home, you could be as productive as you would be in an office, even more productive than you would as going to the office. And I think the whole point of now working from home, the perspective will change. At least it showed it changed. But that also raises the next question. Will this be the end of an office era where everybody has to go to the office to do work? I think this pretty much changes it. And will make room for other initiatives as well, which technology solves at this moment.
I think you may have an actual point there. I don't think we're going to get rid of all of the offices, but I think office usage is definitely going down. And I was reading some articles on this, and they were painting some future picture that it might become like a status symbol when you have an office, like when you can offer your employees the ability to work at a desk at a building.
the world around.
Right, you're working from home. That's for the plebs. No, but I don't see it completely disappearing, but as we mentioned in the previous point, I think that we are able to move away from always having to be at an office, always having to be at a customer locations, and being able to work remotely. But I don't think it'll be completely away, because most people I speak to nowadays, like IT admins and management staff, they will all hang out the flags once they'll be able to drive to work again, which I can kind of join at the moment.
Yeah, and Jitz doesn't even have an office in the Netherlands.
No. Home office only.
Oh, you used to work from home at all, right?
So yeah.
Has it changed for you then, or not at all?
Well, it's a little bit different, right, when the entire family is at home all the day as well. So you kind of feel like, you need to be there for them as well. And still need to be able to focus on work. So sometimes I'll just be in my home office for the entire day. And actually, my wife, she brought some grapes and some nuts and a cup of tea just, 20 minutes ago or something. So that reminds me, oh, yeah, that's true. We have a family downstairs, and maybe I should spend some time there as well. But I think one other point that you just touched upon is the cultures within organizations, and especially in higher management and different management layers. This whole situation also requires a different management style, I guess. Managers, and especially from this more or less like traditional organizations, where these management styles are being used, like, you need to come to the office, even if there's nothing in your schedule. I still want to see you, and I want to be able to, from a physical point of view, to make sure that you are working for us. I don't care what it is that you do. And now they have to let go on this, right? So they have to trust the employees. And I think this will be a tipping point for those managers who always, did it on the traditional approach. Who wanted to see the people coming into the office and maybe some sort of control. I don't know. And I think this will change with this pandemic, of course. Do you have any view on this, Sander?
Yeah, I think they'll have to. And from our shared consultancy backgrounds, I think we've all been managed like that, either by customers or by actual management. And you do have a great point that will have to change. if they can. I don't think if they, I think they are forced to do that at the moment. So they're forced to be able to let go. I don't think that the real big micromanager is very comfortable giving that control away. If I look at my, my personal manager, we have contact once a week, which we always used to do anyway. So I don't feel that pressure down. But I do see a lot of initiatives to get colleagues together again.
And virtual coffee corners and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Virtual coffee corners, which you don't always want to join all of them because that can kind of miss the point as well. But that's also a point of check-in for your manager, I think, to be able to talk and check up on you. But I think you have a great point. They'll have to let go of that old vision that you have to be in an office to be productive. Because I feel that your people are way more productive when they're at home because there's no distraction from colleagues. It's their basically their own time, you know? So they want to make the most of the time that they're actually using. So when I'm when I might be working 5 hours instead of 8, that because I'm doing something with my children or picking something up, and then I'll have to make the most out of those 5 hours. So I'll be way more productive in those five than I would have been 8 at a standard office.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, yeah. This is interesting, right? I think just for the sake of this podcast, and I guess we're all, well, we have more or less the same view on working remotely. But to be honest, I have spoken with some peers in the last couple of weeks, and a couple of them also indicated to me that in terms of productivity, this whole situation is not really helping them. I had this one guy who said to me, well, I wake up at Monday morning and I really need to drag myself into my temporarily a home office. And I really need to kick myself under the butt to get started. And finally on Friday evening, this feeling is over. So he's struggling with this the entire week to really, to get things started. And he's just like monitoring his email, entering the high priority things, but not really taking new initiatives. So some people also suffer from this, and they find it hard to find the energy to start new, smaller or bigger projects. So,
but like you used to talk to the same people pretty much who started this, or who are running this initiative at this moment, that work days tend to be longer and are head-to-head scheduled with meetings. At least mine are, and I know several of the members of our EUC Digest are as well, so for me it's kind of hard to believe that you can't find a way to be productive, but I know there are some people out there who aren't, and maybe I'm a lucky one or not.
I think it's always busy. I think Yitz's example is in two parts. The first is how do you stay motivated when there's no one around you and you only see the screen and you only see people digitally at best, because let's be honest, not everyone uses video conferencing every day for all of their engagements.
And you wonder why I drink.
No. But, well, in my case, I'm actually looking forward to it because I'm getting way more family time at the moment. So I also get family time during lunch, which is something I never used to have. I'm home early because I don't leave the home. We have dinner. So when the weekend's on, that's like an entire day of being with the kids and being with my family. And let's never talk about this with my wife. But when Monday comes around, I'm very excited to get back to work again and to be able to start on things. But as for the second part, the not being able to start up new things, I do experience that it is more difficult to start a completely new engagement, and we're both pre-sales technically, from this perspective where everything's virtual. Is that something you guys feel as well?
Yeah, I also had the problem. I had to start with some new account managers, so and we did a shuffle on accounts. So most of my meetings were first introduction were virtual. And yeah, the first couple were harder as they tend to be right now. And these, you know, it seems to me going more fluently the more I do them. So yeah. Learning on the job.
And our customers are learning on the job as well.
Yeah, but also coping with the technology we are mm-hmm. working with. You know, to me as well, we did a lot of presentations. That's totally different doing that from a screen like a webinar than with an audience in front of you. I think it's way harder without the audience than with the audience.
And way less interactive.
Yeah, it sure is.
Well, yeah, that's a big problem.
There are some great initiatives, right? And we talked with in the previous podcast, if we stick to the release cadence. But in the previous podcast, we talked to Thomas Poppegaard regarding extended reality or virtual reality, augmented reality. And I mentioned one of my colleagues in France. He was attending this conference from Laval.
Do you know the name of this conference at this moment?
I looked it up.
Because you forgot.
Yeah. No.
You're always forgetting.
Yeah, it's a lack of preparation, right? No, but and this was actually a conference where you could attend with your VR headset. So you actually were walking around in the pavilion, going to the auditorium. You walk down the stairs and sit on a chair. You watch the screen where you see the slides of the presenter. And all that kind of stuff. So it was, and for him, he told us that the best experience that he had was just walking around there. And then, of course, his avatar has his name, and it also showed the company he's working for, which is NVIDIA. So some people did walked up to him and just started a conversation with him. So this is something that you would do in a physical world as well. So you see that things are changing. Maybe that also interaction during these online presentations can be improved. But then again, I think the biggest challenge now is that we are bombarded with all these kinds of webinars and live streams. You can easily spend 3, 4, maybe 6 hours a day watching those. For organizations to stick out, you really have to come with something very special.
Yeah.
What I'm wondering though, that is very future looking, right? So enabling VR and having like a virtual room where people can hang around. So that's all really cool. I don't think that most companies will be moving to that quickly.
No, but a lot of new adaptation of especially now working from home. And technologies that are adopted are now on a fast train on being adopted. Mm-hmm. So why does these technologies don't? Especially it comes to my next question. Harvard University predicts this social distancing or pain from this pandemic. Will there be at least until 2025? This will definitely change and disrupt markets. As well as it will create new ones who aren't there before. So I think this will change the line of business we are at this moment, and especially the consumption of your end-user computing and how this will be used.
Mm-hmm. So 2025, you said, right?
Yeah.
So, okay, hold on. I'm going to order this gaming chair for myself as well.
Yeah. Protect your back, man. It's important.
Yeah. Any tips?
Start growing a beard.
Yeah. Yeah. How about all of those pandemic beards at the moment? Yeah. So I can see this actually going on for the long run. And that would mean that companies would have to look into these sort of things. As everything is going virtual, I don't think that there's got to be found some solutions to the problems, right? So I can't imagine like the whole world coming to the standstill that it is at the moment. I can't imagine that that would take 5 years. I think we'll probably find ways to move through this.
But I hope not.
You don't think so?
I hope not. I like my barbecues with my friends and have drinks and that kind of stuff.
All right, right, right. I thought you were defending the other side of that.
No. I hope not.
Yeah. But so, yeah, companies will have to see that this is something that they need to do. And I feel that right now, as I mentioned, they are running the biggest proof of concept there is, because they're being forced into this situation and they're finding out that it's kind of hard. Or harder than they might have expected it to be. So end-user computing might see a gigantic boost in the next coming years as people are all having to upgrade or finally, give it the attention that it deserves. I mean, if I look at customers we're speaking to, they're like, all right, so we always used to have this remote working solution. People were happy using that. So at this moment, they are using that. But we're finding out that a lot of people want to use two screens, and that is a problem. And those weren't problems that they used to see, or that they see problems with the volume at the moment. How do you create your extra capacity needed for that? So yeah. I feel at the moment, these are things that people are looking into, and that will definitely smooth out, I guess, over the next coming years when we have to deal with this reality.
So, yep. Sure. Go ahead. Yes.
Yeah, it's definitely one big pilot phase what we're in now, right? And you see this tremendous increase in digitalizing the end user computing space. And I think, as far as I can tell right now, it's really proving to be a solid solution with the video conferencing, the way people set up, as you just described at the beginning, right? You take more attention to setting up your home equipment. Well, you can't buy any webcams anymore. They're all sold out.
Or microphones. Try buying a microphone at the moment.
Yeah. That's.
I had the same problem with the headset I was trying to buy. It wasn't there anymore. It was in back order, and I ordered almost the most expensive one I could have find. So there was like a difference in like almost 100 euros between the first web shop I found and the one I actually ordered it in backlog.
Yeah, so I imagine that somewhere someone is sitting with a lot of toilet paper and a lot of stack of headphones. And microphones and cameras.
Yeah, must be, right? Yeah.
Like, I'm going to make a profit on these.
Yeah, sure will. But going ahead, future-wise, in the past we talked about robotics and robots that were serving, and it will took a long time before they will be entered into or accepted into our society. To me, this would be a outcome into healthcare, especially with the intensive care and corona patients over there. Do you think those kind of innovations will be adopted somewhat or accepted somewhat earlier in earlier stages, or change the mindset on the how and why we should use it? Because especially the one from Bill Gates actually was that we should raise taxes on robotics and automation because they would replace people. But if you take the use case I was describing before, this would be an outcome without infecting more people, right?
That would definitely be an outcome. And I feel it's the same discussion we've been having with IT admins for the past 20 years, in that, no, I'm not here to make your job obsolete. I'm making you time to do the more interesting things or to do other things that we can do. So from the robotics perspective to the hospital bed, that's a great way. They're actually already kind of playing with that. I saw this this video on the internet from someone's graduation, or probably somewhere in America due to the outfits. And they dressed up
The outfits.
Yeah, due to the when you graduate, you get the little cap and
Okay. So
they
I got you.
they dressed up like self-driving robots with an iPad on top of that, and that had the video feed of the student's face, and they were able to pick up their doctorate. And I was like, that was something we would be looking at like 5 years ago. Like, oh, okay, that would be the future. So they're already looking at
that. I know we talked about this.
I've seen it as well.
I think 1.5 years ago, we talked about this on our previous podcast. And this was something, this will take a long time before this gets accepted into society.
No,
but now it seems.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
That's exactly the point,
you
right?
You go ahead. You're our guest.
Now, but this entire situation accelerated the development and also the adoption of innovations. And maybe a more or a better example is like, for example, the robots in Italy that are being used for the IC patients. Of course, these patients, you need to minimize each and every contact with those patients. So you don't want to expose the hospital staff or at least as less as possible. So they send out these robots to the patients, and the patients could interact with the robot to tell them how they were feeling, and then the doctors can evaluate the outcome and see how they should change the treatment. So this whole situation accelerated this for sure.
Even less futuristic than the whole robots and patients thing. Hospitals are already looking at ways to be able to extend the care, what would you call it?
The
path that you have to walk through to get your care. So instead of going to a doctor's office or going to a hospital, how about the doctor contacts you remotely and tries to examine as much as he can from when you're still at your home? Leaving up space in the hospital, freeing up beds, creating room in the schedule of that doctor. So those are things that they're already looking at. And I think that the current pandemic is actually being beneficial to the implementation of those systems.
Yeah, so it accelerated actually this ongoing technology innovation path.
Yeah, that's what I think, yeah.
Again, the biggest challenge is always fear, right? People tend to fear any changes. So, and this is the same as what we see, for example, in the Netherlands, where the government wants to implement this mobile app running on your smartphone that can track all your interactions with other human beings. And whenever you are exposed to a positive tested person and tested on COVID, I mean, at least it can show some notifications, right? So you can track down the path of the infections. So, but
yeah, you know, Iceland already got some sort of app where you could bump each other if you want to have sex with each other to at least know you're not a relative.
What?
Yeah, if you want to have sex with somebody you don't know, you have to bump your phone to each other so you at least know you are not related to the person you want to have sex with.
And how does the system know that? Do they have like family trees?
Yeah, I don't know, but that was
it's Iceland. It's 50-50.
3 years, two or three years ago. This was.
You're blonde.
They pretty much had the same discussion about this data leakage and kind of stuff, because the it's so easy to have sex with a relative in there.
It's
apparently
easy.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
You brought it up.
Yeah,
I know. No, that's a no. But I don't know how big Iceland is and how easy it is to find your cousin or niece or anything.
But back to the serious topic on that application. How do you guys feel about the security of that? Because it's been negatively in the news. It's been already breached and data leaked everywhere. I don't feel with all of the strides we've been making with all of the privacy things of all of the last year, of the last years, I don't feel that having an app that tracks all of my human interactions, I don't feel that really complies to that.
You already are a Google user, so why do you care?
Ah, that's true.
No, yeah. I think I don't... I want to be as much secure as possible. So the first, I believe, 9 apps they were testing were already breached within a couple of hours. I don't feel very good about it, especially because the companies that are testing those aren't the best hackers in the world. And I don't say they aren't that good at it, because they are way better than me, because if I'm hacking something, I probably wreck it. But I don't feel very confident about those applications, about my whereabouts. And my whereabouts are probably the last 2 months in one location.
Yeah.
But I don't like if it could be breached or could be
but those no smartphone app is 100% secure, right?
But at least with these,
it's already exposed. So I think the biggest challenge here is that, first of all, whenever in this case, the Dutch government is offering an application, the acceptance rate or the adoption rate will probably very low due to the fact that it's from the Dutch government. Whenever you build in the mechanism that you can track with who you've been in contact or in close proximity, whenever you build this something into, like, for example, the app from Facebook, I would guarantee you that the acceptance and the adoption would be much higher.
Yeah.
Because we are already using these apps. And
yeah. But it's pretty much the same one as the Strava app, right? There were a lot of Marines on those hidden locations in America, and all of the sudden, Strava was used by those Marines on those secret locations, but they were also registering their movement. So Strava knew all the roads where those guys were moving, and those tended to be hidden and secure.
That's the sort of thing that will happen with these applications, and when you have free use of applications. I think, to Yitz's point, I agree with you. I think that it needs to be either, if you want to seriously do this, then have it integrate with either the OS or your specific phone vendor or something. If you're going to make it an optional thing, I don't feel that many people are going to be using it. If there's a little benefit in the eyes of the people, and you already see, or at least I see, a lot of people already getting this isolation tired, that they're kind of already slightly breaking rules in order to see people. I don't feel that them installing an app is a valid option.
And otherwise, I would just leave my phone at home and go out.
Let's be realistic. Who leaves his phone at home?
I do. I do once in a while, just to be phoneless. But then again,
visiting family.
When I leave my home, it's in my backyard. So I won't be any. Yeah.
But it's actually kind of funny, right? The Pentagon investing billions and billions of dollars in secure communication for their troops, and then their troops are using just the free Strava app, and the enemy exactly knows and see their patterns.
They could pinpoint exactly where roads were, because there were roads they were running and doing. So that's funny. And I had another question about how technology or EUC would help those markets that are kind of in a downfall, like barbershops, but also nail salons, tattoo shops, or bars and restaurants. Do you think there's a solution for technology or end user computing for that?
Wow, that's a big one. Obviously, a lot of things.
I have a friend in who's working a bar, and I already told him. But what you should do is just make some like take away.
Yep.
What's it called? thing where you could have those virtually or do those wine or whiskey drinking things with video conferencing as add-on and make it a subscription. But he didn't want to go there at first, and now he's doing that. So that's fine.
Well, it's something that we've been doing with our customers and colleagues. Just send out a beer package and make an appointment that on Friday we're going to have like some virtual drinks for an hour. Put on Zoom and drink your beers and talk. So I feel that might be a thing. I think your subscription idea is kind of cool. I don't really know how feasible that is, but most of the things you mentioned are so physical that it's very hard for that to be solved by end user computing. I've seen the videos of people shaving, trying to cut their own hair with the guidance of a hairdresser. I don't see that becoming the new norm. Do you?
No, not really.
You're wearing a hat, no. So.
Hey, but
that's already right.
You already got a community, right? About this, about drinking physical beers and that kind of stuff.
Are you telling me?
No, yes, you got a community around this.
Oh, really? Oh, that's what you mean? No. Well, as you mentioned during this recording, my employer doesn't have an office in the Netherlands, so I work out of home all year, every year. And there are more friends in this case in the Netherlands that kind of have the same situation. They work for a global organization. They report to HQ, and they don't have an office. So we introduced this physical EUC community. So the PEUC instead of the virtual EUC. And every once in a while, we just meet each other at someone's home. So this was all pre-pandemic, of course, and just have a couple of beers, or we go out to dinner with all of us, which is it's nice. It's like this Friday afternoon drinks with the people that are in the same situation. But talking about and this is of course face to face, right? It's all pre-COVID-19. And we talked about this. You talked about this business model where a liquor store, for example, can send out a beer package and maybe a Zoom ID and a scheduled time where everyone would meet up. And we talked about this virtual coffee corners, or I've seen this virtual water cooler gatherings and beer o'clocks and whatsoever sundowners. Everything I've seen coming into my schedule. And to be honest, I never really attended one. I hosted one though, but because I'm kind of struggling with, especially when you're
not
using
being
this...
an alcoholic.
yeah, that's it. No. But I'm kind of struggling with the fact that when you're using digital collaboration tools, it's hard to have different conversations on the same time, right? The challenge is that there's always just one talking to many. It's only broadcasting from one person. Well, when you're in a physical office corner, there are always multiple conversations going on, and you just tune in because this is what we do as human beings. We can filter out some background noise from other conversations. And this is something that with the current solution is simply, not feasible, at least what I have experienced.
That's the entire point. So I attended some virtual beers as well, and it's really hard because everyone's talking over each other and then everyone stops, so then one is decided that he can talk. There are solutions with breakout rooms, for example, which you can set up your own private call from that from the call that you're having, but it's not ideal. And it's not the same as really socializing.
Yeah.
So to go back to your barbecue, Eric, I think we should just go there, sit in the garden, 1.5 meter apart.
Let's do that and invite like the predefined REVM rules, the guidelines you have to commit to. But it's, I think it's time to wrap up because we got a lot of recordings, and I think we can go on for like hours on this topic because I love talking to you on this holistic philosophical kind of stuff. But one last question for my part, and this one is really important, like really important.
I'll brace myself.
Pineapple on your pizza?
Oh, hell no. Why would you even suggest such a thing?
What's wrong
That's
with that?
The only right answer, right?
Well, it's fine if you want to open hell portals and stuff. I mean, if you're okay with the murder. No, I shouldn't go on this tangent. But yeah. No, I do not appreciate pineapple on pizza. I appreciate pineapple. It's very good. It's very nice. It doesn't combine very well with other things, but to put it on
it
hot
does.
Food, no. No.
Go. If you chop them like in those small blocks and put them into your freezer, and after you get them out, you put them into your vodka. It works fine.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, everything mixes with vodka, doesn't it?
It does.
Everything mixes with pineapple, right?
No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, yes, it does.
Okay. So, thank you all for listening. We hope you enjoyed this snack as we try to serve you the right amount of EUC for your appetite. If you have anything you want to add here or just want to stay in touch, reach out to us on our social channels or by email on podcast@euzdigest.com. Cheers, love, and rockets.
This podcast is brought to you by iGel. iGel offers the next generation edge operating system designed for simple, secure, and high performance access to virtual desktops and cloud workspaces. Easy to implement and straightforward to operate.